Well, how to have conversations with plants. Gerald Epling, our special guest. We'll be back with him in your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Gerald Epling, our special guest. We're going to take some of your phone calls as we talk about some of your work. What's been the reaction to what you've done in Cleve Baxter, Gerald?
It has been mixed.
Really?
It has. It has. Some people are not happy with it. I took the egg experiment, and I thought, well, this is very easy to replicate now that I know how to connect the electrodes. So I sent in a response to the Randy challenge. They challenged
people. Oh, for the $1 million deal.
Right, right. And it seemed like a good match. I could use the million. It would help support research. And
give half to the plants.
Why not?
Yeah. It's the plant that's going to do most of the work, right?
Well, that... For the Randy challenge, though, I limited it to an egg because I thought an egg was, you know, a nice, tidy package, and it was something that they could get their mind around, and there wouldn't be too much pulling apart the process. So I just told them about the egg research, and they haven't been able to find time to schedule a test of that. So at any rate, I think they have another agenda. I mean, I'm not sure what it is, but live and let live is the way I see life. I've moved on.
How did you present it to them? I'm curious.
Oh, they have a procedure you have to go through where you tell them how many times in a row you think you can do this or what the odds are, of course, to set the odds. I mean, it happens whenever I remember to put the equipment together properly. I usually get a good result. So I thought, well, I'll stack the odds in my favor. I forget if I told them 1 in 3 or 1 in 4, something like that, to try to give good odds. And then I had to describe what happened. I said, well, you know, monitor an egg in one room, maybe 30 feet away, and start boiling a pan of water, open a dozen eggs, and the instant that I mentally select an egg, I expect to see a response on the monitored egg. And then when I drop the egg in the boiling water, I'll get another response that will also show up on the other egg, or something along those lines. There will be a response to the egg being dropped into boiled water. And we went back and forth. A fellow named Kramer received the original response to their challenge. And he moved on to a new organization, found something else to do. And then Jeff Wagg came on board, and we went back and forth about just details that, we worked through it. And now we have something that may or may not go forward, but I'm not holding my breath.
Well, let us know, Gerald. I'm very interested in that.
Well, I will. Thank you, George.
All right, let's take some calls. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hello there.
How you doing, George?
Good, good. This is Ralph.
Yes, Ralph from Pennsylvania. I got a question for Gerald there. How you doing, Gerald?
I'm well, Ralph. Thank you.
Okay. The reason I'm calling is because a lot of people thought, well, I was crazy a long time ago. God rest my grandfather's soul. He was a gardener, okay?
Yeah.
And he put a 10x10 pad out in the center of the garden with a rocking chair, and he used to play classical music, and he used to talk to his plants. And this is the honest God truth. If you have a email fax machine, I can fax you the article because the paper came and took pictures. But he had potatoes grow on tomato plants and tomatoes grow on potato plants. And the potatoes grew above the ground, hanging just like tomatoes. He talked to his plants every day. He had the most beautiful garden that you could ever notice. They used to take pictures consistently. But he would, for some reason, he would just get out there and talk. And he would ask his plants to cross over, and they would do that. Do you believe that?
I'm not going to say you didn't experience what you experienced. I would need some more convincing, to be honest with you. It sounds intriguing. I don't know. I would need to know more. But I do believe that talking to the plants will encourage them to do what you want them to do. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility.
We still have the article and everything.
Yes.
It was back in like 1985 from the Sharon Herald. And I could fax you the article if you have a fax number and everything. And you can look and see that the article's legit and everything. But the potatoes grew above the ground.
Fascinating. Well, I tell you, the best way to contact me is to go to arthurepling.com, and there's a contact button at the bottom of the page, and just fill out the stuff and then send me a note.
All right, that's it. Arthur Epling. Where did the Arthur come from?
Oh, that's my middle name. Yes, so I decided to tie my middle name and last name together to make a website.
All right, very good. Next up, let's go to West of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi there, Charles in Palm Springs. Hey, I'm so Charles. Glad to get through tonight because this is a dear subject that we all have to be aware of everything in the universe, and the plants are certainly one of them. And I'm horrible with plants.
Oh,
horrible with plants. So out on the patio here in Palm Springs, I have this bottle brush plant.
Yes.
And the hummingbirds would come up to the bottle brush, and there'd be two or three flowers, and I would take pictures of the hummingbirds out there with a bottle brush. So you had this on the show a couple years ago talking about the plants.
Right.
So I went out to the bottle brush, and you had said about talking to them and caressing the leaves.
Right.
So I go to the bottle brush, and I'm saying, bottle brush, you know, you're such a beautiful plant, and the hummingbirds love you, and you're so beautiful. You know, you only have four or five flowers. You know, couldn't you give a lot more? Because I take pictures of you, and I send them on email to friends around the world, and they see what you look like. It went from five flowers to 20.
No way.
Fantastic.
Literally overnight. Now, this is only the first part. So next to it was this other different bush. I don't even know what it is. It's a honeysuckle. Right. Had no flowers at all for 2.5 years. So all of a sudden there was one honeysuckle flower. And I went up to the honeysuckle. I said, well, look at this here. You have a flower here, honeysuckle. And, you know, and I'm just talking and hoping the neighbors don't hear me.
Right.
And I say to the honeysuckle, you know, this bottle brush here is so wonderful. And I take a picture of its flowers and I send it over to friends. You know, how about you giving me some more flowers? Because you haven't done anything. And I'm caressing the leaves, you know, just being really pretty silly about this. 14 flowers the next day.
Wonderful.
It was
unreal. Huh?
I am horrible with plants. Absolutely horrible. So that's where you talk to the plants, and if you want to talk sometimes about animals, I had a little deal with little field mice that we got along, and I talked to it once and spoke English, and the mouse nodded. It understood English.
Well, you know what, Gerald, I would guess that if you also hooked up your equipment to an animal, a dog, a cat, a rabbit, and you reacted the same way you did to the plant, you'd probably get some kind of reaction.
Oh, you do. You get these are simple neurophysiological things that you get. You can see the skin, the DC level go up and down on the skin. You can see the brain activation, the eyes move. You get a wonderful richness and a tapestry of responses that is just amazing. Absolutely. You're right, George. You're exactly right.
You know what it makes you do? It makes you appreciate life better. You know, not necessarily a plant or anything, though you should,
yeah.
But it makes you, I think, feel better about life because it kind of tunes you into so much more.
It does. It does. I grow roses for my wife in the front garden, and I had a similar experience to Charles' experience with the flowers he was growing. I wanted her to have a lot of roses, and the rose bushes came through for me. They produced an abundance of roses. So plants will work to try to please you. I believe that. I can't say that with a capital S of science, because when you do things and you're going to say, here, this happens, like the egg boiling experiment, yes, capital S, science, replicable, here's my data, let other people do it. Or the plant watering, capital S, science, absolutely replicable, I'll just tell you that works. But some of these subjective things are where you find the most pleasure in life.
Is there an experiment that we can do at home with plants?
There certainly is. Now, a couple of things you can do. Plants will respond to you when you enter their space, and it depends on how good you feel. I have a Dracaena that when I wake up in the morning, I feel great. Maybe 15 feet away, it will acknowledge me entering its space. But if I've had a full day, maybe I'm tired, could be the end of the day, maybe 10 or 8 feet away, it will respond to me entering their space. So you can do experiments in that way. And you could use almost anything, any simple device, just to show a response from the plant.
Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Scott in Illinois.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I heard you talking about corn, and I am in the seed corn business.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you guys are aware that drought-resistant corn is in the makings. It's coming.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Bio-engineered, of course, right?
Right.
Genetically modified.
Right. the company that I work for, we're hoping to roll that out in as early as 2010, and we'll see what happens there.
Oh, but, I'm sure there'll be a lot of interest in that.
Yes, absolutely. Of course, you know, drought is one of those things that if, you know, it doesn't happen that often, but when it does, why, it certainly would be beneficial to the customer, the farmer. And so that's something that could increase our overall bushels per acre. And so just wanted to get your comments on that. I didn't know if you were aware of that, what have you.
I was not aware of that. What I would look for, the thing that I may be able to bring to you, a contribution, would be to monitor the response of the corn to being watered. Maybe it takes less water. Maybe that's why it's drought resistant. I'm not quite sure. It could be something in the cellular structure. But there are things that could be done to monitor the leaves, to see how the corn reacts to certain environments, certain thoughts, certain watering patterns that would give you an idea of what to expect when the drought does come.
Okay, thank you. Let's go next to West of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Hi.
And hello, I don't remember the guest name.
His name is Gerald.
Hello, Gerald. So nice to hear you.
Hello, thank you. It's nice to hear your voice, too.
Thank you. Well, I'm the lady that over the years, once in a while, Art Bell has referred to me as a fairy lady because I talk about them once in a while.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about you.
Oh, boy.
You've called in before here, too.
I have. And the reason I'm calling is because they have a lot to do with growing the plants. They're also called the powers of nature and forces of the elements. And I can give two real-life experiences, not of myself, but of two different people, or really another one, that has seen them. I had a friend who was in Germany, a little girl, during World War II. She lived on the edge of the forest, and her mother always sent her out to pick mushrooms. And she told me she saw the little beings of the elements. And then an elderly lady, very truthful in everything, that went to my church, and it's called the inner sight. The inner sight is open, and you can see things. And so she said that one day she came home at the end of the alley where she lived with a beautiful tree. One day she came home, and the people that owned the tree had it chopped down. And there was a little being of the elements sitting there crying and crying. And he said, my whole life's work is ruined. And I had another one, but I can't remember it now. But they say the powers of nature are in our bodies. They're so teeny, but they keep everything going, the whole system, body system, electrical system, and everything going. And there's so much more that can be told about them. I wish maybe they'd have somebody on the program once in a while that would talk about them that really knew everything about them, or at least a lot about them.
All right, thanks. Appreciate your comments. Let's move on to East of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Yes, hi. I'm Rachel.
Hey, Rachel.
New York City.
Sure,
hi.
Thing. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Gerald, I'm so happy to hear you doing what you're doing because it seems to be very exciting, and it also tells me it's another reason for us to be pleasant with everything.
Oh, you're so right, Rachel.
You know?
Yeah.
Because there's repercussions with everything, and you never know who you're harming,
right,
or hurting. And it's so, you know, the world is love. I know it sounds airy-fairy, but what I wanted to really remark on, you mentioned rocks before.
Yes.
And I believe that there is intelligence energy in everything. And I'm not so eloquent. This is coming from the Kabbalah, but it's as if, let's say you had so many incarnations, and in one incarnation God decided, well, let's just, you know, you don't need so much if your spirit is in a rock, and you will stay in this rock until, and then, so what I'm trying to say is that there is life in everything. And I, you know, I have an old refrigerator, and I tell it I love it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want it to break down.
Keep it running.
Yeah, you know, and it may sound silly, but you never know, you know. So anyway, thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you, Rachel.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
You know, she's right, Gerald. That does put you in touch with the universe.
It does, and there is so much communication going on. It starts at the higher levels. The plants will talk to one another about things that are important, but the thing that happens to the plant, that's the most important. And so you see the largest electrical pulse from things that directly affect a plant. But if you pull a leaf off of a plant, to show you how plants are interconnected, I did a study where I got some tomatoes and bell peppers, and I took a leaf off of a bell pepper, hooked it up to high amplification, because being separated from the host plant, you have to really amplify that signal to get it. So it was amplification similar to what you would use for a brain, to look at brain waves. I went out in the backyard and I planted a tomato plant, a tomato plant, and a bell pepper. Each time I planted a plant, the leaf showed a little rise and a fall. Like, oh, that plant got planted. I'm glad. And then when I planted the host plant, it was slightly larger than any of the others.
Now that you know what you're doing to plants,
yes.
I bet it's pretty difficult for you to do that, rip a leaf off or do something like that.
Oh, I had to really think about that. I have an understanding with plants. We seem to get on well. I did one of the first experiments that I did was to wire up a plant and monitor it while I ripped off a leaf and ate it. And the plant did not respond. It was like, okay, I'm a plant. That's what people do. Fine, that's my lot in life. And it seemed not to bother it at all. It was only when I threatened that same plant, which was growing in the garden, with burning, that it had this response of terror.
Yeah, it didn't want to go that way.
No, that was just not a good thing for the plant at all.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting indeed. Let's go next to West of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
My name is Elka. I'm calling from Lomita, California.
Hi, Elka. Go ahead.
I have a plant that was given to us as a gift when our baby died 42 years ago.
Yes.
And so far, it's still alive. But it's now beginning to die, and I've been talking to it all along, and I'm now at a loss what to do.
Oh, there's some things we can do. What is it, a succulent?
Yeah. Uh-huh. God, I don't even know what it's called now anymore.
That's okay. Can you take a cutting and propagate that cutting?
Okay, I give it water with the food in it, of course, you know, they
yeah.
do. And I talk to them all the time. You know, on the other hand, I'm thinking that maybe that her little soul was in that plant, and then she's now been reincarnated, and now the plant doesn't need to be around anymore.
What do you think of that, Gerald?
My religious background or my religious beliefs would suggest that the baby's with God. The baby's gone on. And that the plant is something that helps you remember the baby. There's life in the plant, and there may be a strong connection between your thoughts, the child, and the plant. But I don't think the baby's soul is in the plant. That's my opinion. But getting back to the plant, they grow for a long time. I have a Christmas cactus that is over 24 years old. Someday I know I'll have to take a little twig, snap it off, and grow a new cactus because they don't last forever.
It's a little like life, Gerald. It just goes on forever. We'll be back with more of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. I was going to say this show is deeply rooted, but I'm not going to go there tonight. Back in a moment with Gerald Epling on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, along with our guest, Gerald Epling. Gerald, you've done some other work as well, The Treasure of the Mind. Tell me a little bit about that work.
Yes, that draws on my experience in neuroscience, states of consciousness, and memory research. In Treasure of the Mind, I tried to lay out how people can make memories that they really want to have. So one of the things that you need to have is a roadmap to make that memory. A good theory is only as useful as you can make it. If it's too complicated, then it's not going to be good. If it's too simple, then it's not going to be good. So my theory has three parts. The first part is that you look at an item. Perhaps you look at a mirror, and you see the mirror. That's an item. And then you think, oh, I might go look at myself in the mirror. So now you have a relationship between yourself and the item. And some of that will go into memory, long-term memory or short-term memory. If you maintain that memory, it could very easily go into long-term memory. So we have item-specific processing. There's the mirror. relational, going and doing something with a mirror, and then memory, essential processing, putting it into memory. And that's where I crossed out of neuroscience, as strictly neuroscience, and sort of peeked over the hedge and looked at plants, because it came to me that there's a flurry of activity when a memory is forming. There's a lot going on, but when the memory actually is formed, the activity diminishes, and when you call the memory back, it diminishes. So maybe that memory has gone to the Akashic record, or maybe that memory is in partially in the item. There's a lot of good research tooling. Many of the big researchers in memory say that you need an object to stimulate somebody to really get a memory to come back many times. So that's an interesting aspect, that the memory could be in different things. Maybe you put memory in plants, and maybe that memory comes back to you if you put a good memory into it.
All right, let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. Hello there.
This is Claudia in Petaluma.
Hi, Claudia. That's California, everyone. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm actually from Toronto, Canada, and this took place in 1980. I had a wonderful hibiscus plant that I'd had for about 10 years, and it bloomed around Christmas time. I guess that's the season it would bloom in the islands or whatever. I was being courted by this artist, writer, document maker from England, but there was just something about him. I couldn't put my finger on it. It was that feeling you get when somebody compliments you, but then you sort of think, you know, the seams of my stocking, is it crooked? Do I have spinach on my teeth? It was like an invalidative feeling.
Mm.
And I had him for dinner, or he came for dinner one evening, and then and that was very nice, but again, kind of this guarded feeling. I couldn't put my finger on it. Anyway, the next day I get up, I go in to do my weekly cleaning of plants and everything. My hibiscus looked like it had gone through a radiation blast. Have you ever seen leaves that get so dry so fast that you can just look through them and you see the veins?
I have.
And they're pale, and they're kind of a pale, scorched brown look.
Right.
And the same with all the blossoms. And it was just this plant. And it was my favorite plant. And the only thing that really bothered me, I never saw him again for about 3 years after that. But I kind of felt that I had been courted by what I would call a parasite, a person who lives off of other people's creativity.
Psychic vampires.
One who sucks the life out of your hibiscus. Was it a red flower?
It was one of those beautiful sort of, not coral, but the dusty pink, you know.
Oh, yes, how pretty.
And I always felt it was almost like a gramophone. Whenever I had people there, it's almost as if the plant was listening, because it would sort of like, lean open. And, you know, they have those little white throats and the little tassels that come out.
Yes.
But I became aware that, although and I thought back to the conversation that we had that night, it was very creative on a social level, but I think that what I was picking up is that when you communicate to someone or a plant or anything, it's not so much the words you're saying, it's the intention behind them.
Yes.
And I think he was actually jealous of my creativity in some way or other, because I'm also an artist.
It could have been a number of things. He could have been in a rough time in his life. It's hard to say. Some people are sort of vampires. That does happen. And some people, their colors go dry, and they don't have much to work with, and they try to get some sort of inspiration from one source or another. That's interesting, though, if a hibiscus would suffer so terribly in short order.
Gerald, have you done any work with honeybees, even though they're missing all around this planet these days?
I have. I've listened to many of the reports and followed the literature and the newspaper reports, and I've seen where they have a number of problems, almost like a failure to thrive. A little fungus might get to them, or a mite might get to them that normally isn't a problem. So my contribution, I've just been watching the honeybees around my local area. It's not much of a contribution, but it's what I can do. And I find that the honeybees do prefer the flowers that are grown in the organic garden over flowers that are not grown in an organic garden. And
like the ones that have been sprayed with pesticides and things like that?
Yes, yes. If the ground has been treated with herbicide, it may take 2 years for it to get up to the point that honeybees really prefer the flowers grown in that soil again.
They can tell the difference, can't they?
I think they can. This year has been really exciting because the bees that I have noticed this year look healthier than I've seen in 3 years.
Well, maybe that's a good sign. Are you seeing a lot of them?
I'm seeing more numbers this spring than I saw last spring, so I am seeing more. But it's still not a big bounty like I would have maybe several years ago. But there are more. They seem to be on the rise, and they look better than they've looked in quite a while.
Let's go to our wild card line. Hi there. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Hello. This is Charles.
Hey, Charles. Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from Fulton, Kentucky.
Ah, yes. Go ahead.
Excuse me. That's Gerald Depling.
Depling.
Depling. Okay. Okay. My question, have you ever tried or has anyone ever tried other meters, such as Gauss meters that measure electromagnetism, or temperature sensors, or laser temperature sensors, anything like that?
Yes, I've used some lasers. I've used some electrometer-type meters. You sound like you know a lot about meters. Is that true, Charles?
I don't have a solid electronic background, but I've always had an interest.
Well, there are some meters that you have to have a good connection to the leaves with. You have to use gels, just like you would use with a human, and you have to connect them very well. There are other meters. The Firefly is a meter that's more like an electrometer. It's very forgiving. You can use a couple pieces of aluminum foil and get a response. But there are changes in temperature. There are many things that people are doing with plants to observe this or that phenomena that might be helpful, and I think that it's very encouraging. I focus on the ones that relate to psychology. I treat the plant as a psychological variable, so I really tend to focus on that aspect.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're
all
welcome.
Right, Charles, appreciate that. Next up, first-time caller line. Take it away. Hi there.
This is Brandon.
Brandon, go ahead.
I'm calling from Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a question for the guest. I was going to see if he had ever done any experiments with fungi, specifically psychoactive fungi.
Oh, yes, I see where you're going. No, I haven't, actually. I haven't. And I know there are some very interesting things that could be found there, but I have not worked with it.
Okay.
All right. Now, you've done some work, Gerald, with people comparing it to plants with this biocommunication. Tell me about this.
I sure have. There are experiences that people have where they sense someone looking at them, and there's a certain electrophysiological response that you can see. And I've compared that to the response that plants might have when I walk out and look at them. I might stare at them and see what they do. And I'm finding some slight correlations there that may pan out and may be very interesting. So there's that. It's just, there's so many things that you can find. It's amazing.
Somewhere along the line, you've got to conclude that plants, as living things, have the ability to pick up on emotion, to pick up on thought patterns, to pick up, I guess it's just pure consciousness, isn't it?
It's something to do with consciousness. I think of consciousness as a conduit. There are a lot of ways to view consciousness, I know, but I've had to more or less try to wrestle with that and see how I would use it. I think of it as a conduit. So you're conscious. You ask me questions. They're great questions. You really help to bring things out, to focus attention on things, and to share this with your audience. And that's the sign of your mind reaching out through your consciousness and using this to be a good experience. But I'm not sure when I look at a plant, I reach out, I talk to the plant. You remember you said maybe the plant's just responding?
Yes, like a mirror.
Right. And one other option is maybe God's saying hi. So I'm not sure the plants are conscious. I'm sure they respond. I have no doubt in my mind. And I'm sure they're somewhat individual.
To San Francisco we go, west of the Rockies. Hi there, Neil.
Hi, this is Neil in San Francisco.
Sure.
Thank
thing.
You for taking my call.
Okay.
I just had a question. I'll take it off the air. How about the plants of the rainforest? I mean, all of them are being destroyed. What can we do to heal the planet?
Interesting question, Gerald. What can we do to heal the planet, if anything?
No, I think there's something you can do. I sense that plants communicate over long distances and perhaps from one plant to another on down the line. I would say try to be kind to plants. Try to be kind to people. Try to have always good communications. People who would be deceitful and who would use you for bad ends, pray for them. And That's probably what you can do that will help the planet right where you are tonight, tomorrow, and the next day.
Okay, next up, International Line. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
This is Wallace calling from Edmonton, Alberta.
Okay, go ahead.
I had a question regarding genetic engineering of plants.
Yes.
Do the ones who are the plants that are engineered or made in a lab, the seeds, do they behave differently than the ones that are natural or organic?
The differences are very subtle. I haven't worked with them enough to see any real differences that I could say, oh, I can identify this genetically modified plant. And the transgenic plants I stay away from. It seems a little creepy to me to take like a human piece of the genome and put it into a piece of rice, or to take a piece of jellyfish and put it into a mustard plant. So I tend to leave those alone. There are genetic responses that can be determined. By example, in Korea recently, there was a breakthrough study. It came out last summer in the Journal of Molecular Breeding, where they played sound to these rice plants. They played 50 hertz, 250 hertz, other sounds, and they found that 50 hertz actually inhibited the plant. It didn't express itself as fully as it would normally, but 250 hertz actually encouraged the plant to express itself more. So now we have thoughts, maybe 50 hertz is not the best frequency to run your power at. Maybe we have a better situation in America with 60 hertz, don't know. But there are things we can learn from genetic engineering and from studies of genetic expression, per se.
Okay, Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, this is Marilyn from Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay.
And hello to your guest, too.
Hello, Marilyn.
I wanted to say my daughter was going to the University of Florida. It's been several years ago, but she had a class in horticulture.
Yes.
And she come home telling me one day one of the professors and all, that they were, you know, showing different things of the plants and what would happen if you, you know, picked their leaves or you did things like this. And so,
right.
Anyway, they had some tomatoes that was growing on these vines and all. And she says, Mother, I could not believe it. She says, did you know that tomatoes cry when you cut them?
They respond. I don't like to think of it as crying, because I do like tomatoes in my salad.
Oh, me too, me too. But she said, I don't think I'm ever going to eat another tomato, you know. But anyway, they did something with some plants where they put some in a room where there was loud music, you know, rock and roll music.
Yes.
And then they put some in rooms where there was nice listening music.
Yes.
And the plants in the room with the soft music really flourished and did well. And so she says, could we try this at home? And we did.
Yes.
We did, because I always had a garden out. And honestly, we had two, I can't remember the name of the plants, but they were dish gardens. And so we did that, and we tried it, and it was true that the plants, I had the soft listening music in the room and all with, it did flourish more than the one that I would, you know, turn up the music and all where it was loud and, you know, noisy. So I really believe in this.
Well, I think
really
there are two things that you can look at that are going on there. One is definitely the loudness of the music and the frequencies, and the other is how you feel about it. And both of them are important. Sometimes it's hard to parse out and see just how important each element is, but the results from the Korean study show the actual sound coming to the plant is very important. Just as if you were structuring water, you would want to have the right structure in that water. You'd want to have the right sound. Makes sense.
On our guest, Lynn McTaggart, who writes about the field, there's no doubt that what she writes about is also tied into what you do, Gerald.
Yes, I really enjoy her book. I've got a copy of The Field. I haven't read her most recent contribution, but I do enjoy her writing.
What can we learn from the stimulus of these plants, the emotion of these plants? How can we equate it into our everyday life?
We're all connected. I find that as on a subjective level, as I learn more about plants, I am much more sensitive to the stares of other people. If I am in the grocery store, sometimes a little baby will look at me, you know, they just want to say hi, so you say hi back to them. And I've always been sensitive to that. But then I'm also more sensitive recently to downsides, like a child was standing in line next to me with her father. And her mother was sitting down. She was tired, but I could feel these waves of sadness coming from the child. And I looked down and I looked up, and then I could see that she wanted to be with her mother. Dad's okay, but mom's better, sort of thing. So there's a sensitivity that you get that you can use. And the beauty of it is, if it really affects you deeply, it's greater. But if it doesn't affect you personally, the sensitivity is not so great that you can't bear it. There's so much sadness in the world. You could be overwhelmed. Not a good thing. But I think it's good. It's almost as if you develop the sensitivity you can handle at any given time.
I understand you're doing some work with our friend Dr. Nick Begich.
Oh, Nick, what a great man. You know, you talk about someone who is sensitive to the environment around him and just on top of the technologies. Yes, I'm not actually doing it with Dr. Nick. Dr. Nick suggested something to me that I picked it up and I ran with it because it was such a wonderful suggestion. He said, you know, Gerald, microwaves have effects on food. I thought, yes, I know, because...
They sure do.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to eat that. Every now and again, I would, though, before I did this experiment. Now, pretty much, I won't eat anything from a microwave if I know it's come from there. And here's what Nick suggested. He said, take a cup of water and heat it up in the microwave and then let it cool down to room temperature and use that to water a plant. And use some other water that's not been treated to water another plant or seedling and see how that goes.
I bet you saw a big difference.
Oh, huge difference, George. Huge. If they were people, it would have been a failure to thrive.
Good point. A lot of people microwave coffee and tea and things like that. Stay with us. Back with more phone calls with Gerald Epling on Coast to Coast AM.